From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Authentic and John Velasquez have the lead as they come down to the 16th ball. Tis the Law still trying to get him. Authentic, Tis the Law, here's the buyer. Authentic has won the Kentucky Derby.
And now they're past the 8th ball, and it is Firenze Fire with the lead. Funny Guy giving chase with Share the Ride, but it's going to be Firenze Fire. Victorious in the Vosburgh, 1-3.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Swiss Skydiver digs in at the rail. Authentic on the outside. These two putting on a show. The Derby winner in the filly. Swiss Skydiver inside. Authentic outside. They're nose to nose. All the way to the wire. And it is going to be a photo finish.
See, there's the devil, strikes the front of the eighth pole. Swiss Skydiver's trying hard, but she's still second. Not today for Gamine. It is She Dares the Devil turning back Swiss Skydiver, Gamine, and all the rest. She Dares the Devil scores in the Oaks.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone. Good morning, and welcome to the show that launched this network, the Equine Forum, right here on HRRN, the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you with me on this Breeders' Cup edition of the show. Happy Breeders' Cup Saturday. You're listening throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, on our affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country, or you're tuned in digitally with our live streaming or podcast of the show on our HRRN website at horseracingradio.net. Well, I can't really give you a Breeders' Cup countdown to open the show this morning. I've done that for the past several weeks, past couple of months, actually. So how about this? 175 days, 9 hours, 42 minutes, and 56 seconds until the Run for the Roses, Saturday, May 1st, 2021 at Churchill Downs in Louisville. 175 days. Come on, it'll be here before we know it. And that is something that yesterday's Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner is going to have his eyes focused on over the course of that next 175 days. And, of course, I'm talking about trainer Brad Cox and his talented two-year-old Essential Quality, the son of Gainsway stallion Tappet, who rolled the victory, a determined victory yesterday, over 94-1 long shot, Hot Rod Charlie. How about the effort from Hot Rod Charlie? Take nothing away from him. Looked like he once he got in front of Jackie's Warrior, the favorite, you thought, okay, it looks like he's home free, but then all of a sudden, Essential Quality, who just kept plugging along, right? I mean, this is a horse that showed so much heart and determination in that victory yesterday. At the top of the stretch, you know, he was moving well. Larry Colmus, Kurt Becker, they gave him big calls, and you thought, okay, here we go. And he did. He didn't stop. And he gets the victory for Godolphin. And how about this? Looking ahead to that first Saturday in May, Brad Cox, despite all of the success that he has had recently in our sport, and there has been a lot of it, and probably more to come later today, has never had a Kentucky Derby starter. I was blown away when I pulled up the media guide and looked at that. Has never had a Kentucky Derby starter. Of course, we know Godolphin wants to win the Kentucky Derby so desperately. 0-11 in the Run for the Roses for Godolphin. Maybe Essential Quality is the horse to do it for him. He's now a perfect 3-for-3. Came out of that big win in the Breeders' Futurity at Keeneland back on October 3rd. And now a winner of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile yesterday. So congratulations to all of those connections. Congratulations, too, to all of the winners yesterday. It started with the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint that was 5.5 furlongs on the firm turf course. And by the way, felt more like the first Saturday in May than the first Friday in November yesterday at Keeneland. Going to be like that again today, too. Should be a spectacular day for day two of the Breeders' Cup. But the Juvenile Turf Sprint going to Golden Pal, the 2-year-old son of Coolmore stallion Uncle Mo, Wesley Ward, the trainer, Irod Ortiz Jr. aboard for Ranlow Investments, and that was a big win for them. That's a horse that, well, now, as you heard Wesley say in his post-race interview yesterday, going to be pointed toward Royal Ascot. And Wesley has had success there, so good luck to them as they make their way in that direction. Then you have the Juvenile Turf, which was the seventh race on the card yesterday, and our first upset of Breeders' Cup 2020 with Fire at Will, owned by Three Diamonds Farm, the son of Declaration of War, Mike Maker, the trainer, Ricardo Santana Jr., a couple of wins on the card for him yesterday. Fire at Will gets the victory there, 30-1 upsetter in that race. The Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies, this is a cool story too, went to VQuist, Gary Barber, Watchtell Stable, Swolcan Stables, the owners. The son of Kentucky Derby hero Nyquist, trained by Butch Reed, who began his training career at Monmouth back in the 1980s, early 1980s, I believe it was 83. Trained at Monmouth for 15 years before moving to Parks. His second Breeders' Cup win, people might forget his first. It was a Fleet Again in the 2011 marathon, but Butch Reed said after the races that, or after the win, that this might have been the biggest win of his career. And VQuist looked impressive under Joelle Rosario. So congratulations to her as she begins to point toward the first Friday. Well, I would say the first Friday in May, but that's not the case. It'll be the last Friday in April next year with the way the calendar falls, with the Derby being on May 1st. Then you had the Juvenile Fillies Turf. 1 mile on the firm turf course. And Aunt Pearl, look, she's a monster. She is a monster. I thought Spanish Love Affair, who was second behind her last time, had a legitimate shot to turn the tables this time. I was wrong. Aunt Pearl is a beast. Went to the front, opened up, never looked back. Again, for Brad Cox. Big day for Brad Cox. Florent Giroux aboard for the winning ride, and Aunt Pearl, owned by Michael Dubb, Matticat Stables, Peter Deutsch, and others. Yeah, she's tough. She's going to be a handful moving forward, is Aunt Pearl. So congratulations to all the connections of all the winners yesterday. More action to come today. 9 races coming up. We'll be there with all of your coverage beginning at noon Eastern, so make sure you're locked into us. We will have the every single Breeders' Cup race for you this afternoon, noon to 5:30. Sirius 219, XM 201, that's exactly where you're listening now. Affiliates around the country and streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net. Congratulations, too, to trainer Todd Pletcher. You heard him on the show a couple of weeks ago, and I asked him about getting close to the 5,000 career win milestone. And he said, yeah, I'm aware of it because everybody keeps bringing it up to me. And it's one of those things, whenever you see an athlete or a trainer or whatever it might be, get close to a number, to a milestone, so often they kind of go into neutral and they stall out a little bit and they hit a mini slump trying to get to that number. Well, Todd just got it out of the way. He just barreled right toward it, looked it in the eye, and yesterday recorded his 5,000th career victory. So congratulations to Todd. Came back right after that, by the way, and won number 5,001, the future Hall of Famer, on a roll. And he'll have more chances to add to that number in today's Breeders' Cup races, so make sure you keep an eye on trainer Todd Pletcher later today, too. A lot of great stuff happening in our sport. I'm going to talk to Al Stahl Jr. coming up in just a little bit. Al, the trainer of Tom's d'Etat in today's Breeders' Cup Classic. And Al has started 8 horses in the Breeders' Cup. He's won once, but it was a pretty big one. Blame running down Zenyatta in the 2018 Breeders' Cup Classic. I should say Zenyatta trying to run down Blame, but Blame holding off Zenyatta. It was a huge win for Al. He's going to try and get another one later today. Tom's d'Etat, 6-1 on the morning line. That's good value for this horse. Here's a horse that won the Grade 2 Stephen Foster earlier this year. Was third last time out. I know Al wasn't crazy about the trip last time out in the Whitney. But on his day, Tom's d'Etat, and he's had a lot of good days here in 2020. He's a horse you better keep an eye on later today. And I'll talk to Al coming up at 8:15 Eastern. 8:35 Eastern, I'll be joined by Dallas Baker, who is with BetMakers Technology Group. He's going to tell you how Kentucky Derby winner Authentic can pocket another $1 million with a win in today's Breeders' Cup Classic, courtesy of the BetMakers Bonanza. That's a promotion that was launched this summer in partnership with the folks at Monmouth Park. And he'll update you on some really exciting new developments in New Jersey, which will be huge for horse players. But that Betmakers Bonanza is a cool promotion. And it's the first of, I believe it's a 3-year deal for them to sponsor that Betmakers Bonanza. So I'll talk to Dallas coming up at 8:35. He'll fill you in on that information. 9 o'clock Eastern, Daily Racing Form turf writer Marty McGee will be with me. He's going to share his thoughts on Breeders' Cup Friday and some of the top storylines and horses that we should be keeping an eye on later today. 9:30, I'm going to look back on American Pharoah's tour de force performance in the 2015 Breeders' Cup Classic. That, of course, turned out to be his final career start by design. NBC's Larry Colmus had the television call. Keeneland announcer Kurt Becker provided the call for radio listeners around the world on our HRN coverage. And I talked to both Larry and Kurt about their approach to calling such a monumental race, their quest to find the proper words to fittingly send American Pharoah off to stud, and what that race meant to them and to their careers. Some fascinating comments by both announcers, and some same perspectives and some completely different perspectives on their approach to calling that race. I think you're really going to enjoy that interview, and it comes up at 9:30 Eastern. One other note before I throw out the poll question and get to our first break. One other note regarding the races later today at Keeneland. Christophe Soumillon came here to ride a couple of horses in the Breeders' Cup and tested positive for COVID. They gave him a second test. He tested positive and confirmed the first result. So Christophe is isolating, and from the report that came out from Breeders' Cup yesterday, has no symptoms. So we wish Christophe the best. But Colin Keane is going to ride Tarnawa in the Breeders' Cup turf, and Pierre-Charles Boudot will ride Order of Australia in the mile later today. That horse is on the also eligible list, and if I do get some of the scratches before I wrap this up at 10 o'clock this morning, I'll go ahead and pass those along to you. But Colin Keane will ride Tarnawa in the turf. Pierre-Charles Boudot will ride Order of Australia in the mile if Order of Australia should get in. All right, poll question for today. Which horse or horses, we can make it both, which horse or horses are you most looking forward to betting on in today's Breeders' Cup races? You got 9 Breeders' Cup races. I'm sure you have a horse or two picked out that you think is a cinch, a stone-cold lock. Bet the farm. If you got 2 farms, what the hell? Bet them both. This horse can't lose. They'd have to fall down for this horse to lose. I want to hear which horse or horses you're most excited or most looking forward to betting on in today's Breeders' Cup races. You can do that at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and you can also email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net, and I will pass along those answers later in the program. All right, Al Stahl Jr. kicks it off next when I return. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Promises fulfilled.
Promises fulfilled.
They're off in the Breeders' Cup Sprint. And there goes Promises Fulfilled off to the lead. Blazing first fraction.
It's Strike Power taken on by Promises Fulfilled. A half mile in 43.92 seconds.
Good Magic has been defeated. The leader, Promises Fulfilled.
Promises Fulfilled is still there close to home. Promises Fulfilled is going to win the Allen Jerkins.
Standing at Windstar Farm.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life, several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
Recognized for raising and selling racehorses, Millridge has raised or sold 8 Breeders' Cup winners since 2000, including Oscar Performance. Now in his third year at stud at Millridge, covering 118 mares in his first year and 116 in his second. Since 2000, Millridge has raised or sold 35 Grade 1 winners and associates with leading breeders. Included in this year's Keeneland November sale are broodmare offerings from Judmont Farms and leading breeder George Strawbridge, all selling without reserve. Millridge, raising and selling racehorses.
Hi, I'm Leah Jarmati, and I love listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Tom's Data willingly has taken the lead. Tom's Data opens up to lead by two. By My Standards and Pirates Punch bag it out second and third. Silver Dusk is now fourth. They're off the turn. Tom's Data shaken up to a three-length lead. By My Standards is trying hard, but he's still second. Silver Dusk is third. Multiplier trying to come on late for fourth. But with a 16th to go, it's total domination for Tom's Data. Tom's Data scores by four. By My Standards was second. Silver Dust was third. Multiplier was fourth. That's four in a row for Tom's Data. And the Breeders' Cup down the road, too.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Breeders' Cup edition of the program. That was Travis Stone with the call of the Grade 2 Stephen Foster at Churchill Downs at the end of June, and Tom's Data just blew the doors off the competition that day. He returned, was beaten as the favorite in the Grade 1 Whitney, but he's won 11 of 19 starts for trainer Al Stahl Jr., who, by the way, knows a thing or two about winning big races. He saddled nearly 1,700 winners in his career, including Blame to win the Breeders' Cup Classic over Zenyatta back in 2010. This will be his ninth Breeders' Cup starter today when Tom's Data goes to the post in the Breeders' Cup Classic. 6-1 on the morning line. I told you, I think that is crazy. I think Tom's Data should be shorter than that. I think that 6-1 is an overlay on this horse. Al Stahl Jr. is with me now. Al, happy Breeders' Cup Saturday. What say you? 6-1, too high on this horse today?
Well, he's even money in our mind and heart, but from what I've seen with the doubles and all that stuff, people send me some tweets. He's actually the favorite in those juvenile classic doubles and things like that. So guys like Marshall Graham, who put out the imputed odds, he's got him like 2.6, 260 to 1 right now. So I don't think 6 to 1 is going to be on the board.
All right. I always liken trainers to being a coach, say in basketball, for example, and you're teaching these athletes, you're bringing them along, you've gotten Tom's Data to an extremely high level. So defend your player, Al. Why can Tom's Data win the Breeders' Cup Classic later today?
Well, Tom's Data, at his age, he's a player coach, so he knows what he's doing, and he's whatever happens, he can handle. If the pace is slow and he's close, if he's in the middle of the pack, he's fine. Ian Rosario will take care of all that. There's not much I do. I just kept him in his regular routine, and he seems to be very, very happy and going quite well for us.
Size up the competition for me. Bob Baffert with three horses in there, including Maximum Security, last year's three-year-old champion. You get a rematch with By My Standards. Of course, the rematch with Improbable, too, who beat him last time in the Whitney. Tacitus from Bill Mott. Size up the competition for me a little bit.
Well, it's no surprise. It's a Breeders' Cup Classic, so it's a kind of a who's who of the older horses, including some nice three-year-olds. I think that's the new wrinkle this year with the way the Triple Crown got pushed back because of COVID. So the three-year-old schedule was spaced out more than the traditional Triple Crown, so they weren't beat up, and it kind of feeds them into this race very nicely. So I think the 2 3-year-olds are very good horses, and they might have a little more freshness than a traditional three-year-old, with the exception of Pharaoh. So they might be more of a factor than three-year-olds normally are.
Yeah, you kind of get the sense that horses like Authentic and Tis the Law, the 2 3-year-olds, are maybe, especially Tis the Law, Al, I look at him as being almost the forgotten horse because he hasn't run since, you know, the Kentucky Derby and skipped the Preakness, and now he comes into the Classic as a fresh horse. But you kind of look at those horses and you say, especially with Tis the Law, out of sight, out of mind, right?
Well, that's what Tom St. Tom went through, so he's not out of my sight or mind. I mean, he's got mile and a quarter experience. He's run it twice at the Travers and the Derby, and he's got great form in those races, and his numbers are good, and he's got Barkley tag, and he's an absolute factor as far as I'm concerned. We're going to be keeping a close eye on him. He's to our inside, and he might be one to lay a little ahead of us earlier and maybe follow along.
Give me the ideal scenario for Tom's d'etat to win this afternoon, the ideal trip that you'd like to see. Obviously, you want him to run faster than everybody and cross the line first, but if you could script this on paper, how would you do it?
Well, in a perfect world, I guess you'd like to make a clear lead and go in 50 seconds. That's not going to happen. So plan B would be if the speed goes away from there, let Rosario and Tom just settle in and let them hopefully pick up the pieces towards the end. So, whatever, however it turns up, we're versatile enough to handle. I just want him to get out of the gate. He's a good gate horse. I'm 100% positive that the break at the Whitney was a complete aberration, and we won't see that this afternoon. So, when he leaves there well and tucks in behind some of those horses, he should save ground, and certainly in the first turn, and after that, let them separate themselves from the 3/8 home.
He's only had one other start at Keeneland. That came in October of last year when he won the Grade 2 Fayette Stakes and did it quite convincingly that afternoon as well. That was a different track than he's going to run over this afternoon, Al, but does it give you some confidence and peace of mind to know that, okay, he at least handled the surface at Keeneland that one time?
Yeah, it was wet that day, but the environment is still the same. I mean, the barn area and the feel to it, and horses sense that. So, and we can actually tell he's been unbelievable since he's been here since Wednesday. Just bright and happy, and I think he knows he's back home, so to speak. And I think he's going to love it this afternoon. No excuses, that's for sure.
Visiting with trainer Al Stahl Jr. here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Tom's d'etat going to the post for Al this afternoon in the Breeders' Cup Classic, his ninth Breeders' Cup starter. Al, it comes for Gail Benson and GMB Racing. Of course, her late husband Tom passed away in 2018. He was a dear friend of yours, longtime clients. What has Tom's d'etat and that relationship with the Bensons meant to you?
Well, it all comes together. We're all from New Orleans, and we're all friends, and it's just been a lot of fun. We're excited to represent the city of New Orleans, and obviously the Benson name is iconic down there and around the country, and we're all Saints fans. I've been going to the Saints game since 1967, and we're just all tied in. I mean, the roots run so deep, it's unbelievable. And then to have this type of horse, I mean, forget about the talent, but just what he's gone through, and to have the quality of that he has, it's a dream come true, is what it is. To have this all come together for all these people on the same day, on the biggest stage, it's almost an impossibility, but yet we've made it.
You mentioned representing New Orleans. Is that the way you feel when you lead a horse over for a big race and they're owned by GMB Racing? Do you kind of feel that, hey, I walk in there with some pride because I am representing New Orleans with this horse?
Oh, yeah. And my text messages and emails say the same. So, yeah, there's a tremendous amount of interest, and I imagine I'll get quite a few hits on my phone from now till post time, and most of them will say 504.
Well, you know, I had the chance to visit with Gail Benson years back. It might have been 4 or 5 years ago now, before the Kentucky Derby, and we did an interview, and she was so sweet and so gracious, and you couldn't help but just be blown away by her presence. And now, after Tom has passed on, she's continued to move forward with the racing operation. Just spend a minute talking about her and what she has meant, not just to your career, but to the sport as a whole?
Yeah, no, she's just a good person. I knew Gail before she was married to Mr. Benson. She actually lived near my parents, and she was very, very kind-hearted person from the first time we ever, you know, we ever met. And, dealing with her is a great thing, and she's heartbroken that she can't be here, and none of the Benson crew are here because of the NFL's got them as tier one, tier two employees, and or. That would have not employees, but they're in that zone as far as going to the Saints game in Tampa tomorrow night. So they really couldn't go from one bubble into another state and then go back down to Florida. So they would love to be here, and they would have been here, but they'll be watching really closely, and hopefully we have a lot of good things to talk about this afternoon.
Well, I'm sure you will. Al Stahl Jr. representing New Orleans with Tom's Day Todd today. In the Breeders' Cup Classic. Post time, by the way, for that race, 5:18 Eastern. We'll probably go just a little bit after that time, and we'll have it for you right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, with coverage beginning at noon. Al, I asked you to defend your player when I talked about Tom's Day Tot. How about this? Defend your Saints against the Buccaneers. Tampa favored by 4.5 coming up tomorrow night.
Right. No, well, it's on the road. It's going to be a tough game. They played horrible. Well, both teams didn't play so well, but Tampa played horrible on Monday night. So you know you're not going to get that game. Tampa's going to show up with everything they have, and we still have they have an injury bug too, but we've got a little bit more of that going on. So I'm very, very worried, but as long as we got Sean and Drew and our defense, I think we're always going to be in the game. So I'm looking so forward to sitting on the couch and relaxing and watching that game tomorrow night. I cannot even tell you.
Well, you know, as a diehard Steeler fan, there's no way I'm cheering for Tom Brady. So, who dat nation? Let's go, who dat.
Yep.
No, did I say it right? Did I even get it right?
You got everybody where you want them.
You got it. Al Stahl Jr., thanks, brother. Good luck with your Saints tomorrow night. Good luck with Tom's Day Tile later today, too. Appreciate the visit.
Okay, Mike. Anytime. Thank you.
All right. You talk about one of the good guys in the sport. There you go. Al Stahl. And you think about Al and the success that he's had. I mentioned he's trained nearly 1,700 winners. And only his ninth Breeders' Cup starter. I told you I was surprised to see that Brad Cox hasn't had a Derby starter in his career yet because of all his success. Well, I know eight is a good number. I mean, look, there's a lot of trainers that would give their right arm to train eight Breeders' Cup starters. But I thought that was a little higher for Al Stahl. But he can be 2-for-9, and both wins coming in the Breeders' Cup Classic if Tom's Day Todd can get the victory. And, you know, I'll tell you this. As many of you know, I'm a huge fan of the Brist Pass performances, and one thing I love is the late pace figures that they give you in the Brist PPs. And if you just go strictly by the late pace numbers, the horses that can finish in these races, it really, consistently anyway, I mean, there's horses that have popped big numbers from time to time. Maximum Security is not one of them. Tom's Day Tot is one of them. By My Standards is another one that consistently finishes fast according to the Brist late pace numbers. And Improbable throws in some big ones, but he also throws in some not so big ones. So really, By My Standards, Tom's Day Tot, if you go strictly by the late pace numbers and the Brist PPs, those are your two horses. Now, that's only one factor. There's a lot of other things to consider, but I think Tom's Day Tot at 6-1, if you do get 6-1, is a steal. Should be really tough in there. You heard him reference the break in the Whitney. Got off really, really slow. Al thinks it's an aberration. If he gets out of there today, he's tactical. He can come from off the pace. He can be up close. It's going to be fun to see him strut his stuff later today, and that should be one heck of a horse race. The $6 million Classic, again, 5:18 Eastern, and our coverage, noon Eastern, kicks off here on the network. Make sure you're with us all afternoon long. We'll have you covered start to finish. All right, time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf. When I come back, I'm going to visit with Dallas Baker from BetMakers. He'll talk about Authentic and the way that he can pocket another $1 million. In today's Breeders' Cup Classic, if the Derby winner can find a way to win that race later today. But first, your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the folks at the Lexus store of Lexington on the corner of New Circle and Liberty right here in Lexington, Kentucky. Stop by and see them. This is your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
This tidbit of thoroughbred racing lore covers a time span. A time span, in this case, being the career of a horse which was a record setter while racing, but whose credentials as a sire stamped his name in capital letters on the now yellowing pages of recorded thoroughbred racing history. Calumet Farm purchased his horse as a yearling in 1936 at the Keeneland sale for $14,000 from Coldstream Studs Consignment. As a performer on the racetrack, he was good enough to win the Widener, Bluegrass, and Kenner Stakes, the Thornton Memorial, and the Autumn Handicap. At Keeneland, just a stone's throw from Calumet, he set track standards for 1 1/16 miles and 1 1/8 miles. In 27 starts, he had 10 wins, 7 seconds, and 2/3. That composite was accrued in 4 years of racing. He entered stud in 1944, a pittance, $750. But that quickly shot up when Twilight Tear and Duranza became successful on the racetrack as two of his progeny. These two were resultant of his first crop to race. He led the sire list 5 times, 1947, 48, 49, 52, and 53. He ranked second on the sire list 3 times, 3rd once, 5th once, and 8th once. At the time of his death in 1964, he had been matched only by Starshot and the legendary Nasrullah as a leading sire. He was the very first stallion who's get over $1 million in a single season, and he did it in back-to-back years in 1946 and 47. His get included 28 $100,000 winners, and he sired 358 foals, of which 268 of them won. To the end of his final year at stud, his offspring had accounted for 1,723 wins. He was the daddy of the consummately superb Citation, the solid-performing, hard-knocking Coal Town, and the quintessential filly Bewitch, all from a single year's crop. Bewitch and Twilight Tear were two of America's very best mares of all time. Our subject's thoroughbred sired two other Kentucky Derby winners in addition to Citation in 1948. He was the sire of Hillgale, who won in 1952, and Iron Liege, who won in 1957. For 5 years, from 1951 through 1956, his get held all 3 individual money-winning championships. Bewitch as a mare, Armed in 1947, and Citation in 1948 were Horses of the Year, and Coal Town was named Outstanding Performer of 1949. Another of his get, Bull Page, was Canadian Horse of the Year in 1951. His offspring included these divisional champions: 2-year-old Citation, 2-year-old fillies Duranza and Bewitch, 3-year-olds Twilight Tear and Citation, 3-year-old fillies Twilight Tear, Thule, Wistful, Next Move, and Real Delight. Handicap Horse, Armed, twice by the way, Citation and Coal Town, Handicap Mares, Bewitch, Twilight Tear, Thule, and Real Delight, and Champion Sprinter Coal Town. This remarkable thoroughbred led the list of broodmare sires for 4 successive seasons, 1958 through 1961, and the offspring of his daughters included Quadrangle, Ambipoise, Blue Scope, Bourbon Prince, Finnegan, Good Moo, A Pat on the Back, Bardstown, On and On, Restless Wind, I Done, Tim Tam, Leala, Barbizon, Pucker Up, Dukes Lee Lane, and How Now. Among his get, subsequently becoming leading sires, including the likes of Citation, sire of Fabius, Silver Spoon, and many others, and Bo Max, sire of How Now and Golden Notes. At the time of his demise on June 16, 1964 at Calumet, he had established a record as the most successful sire of the 20th century in America. This son of Bulldog, out of Rose Leaves by Ballot, who left many memories, records, and a statue next to his gravesite at Calumet, and whose legend lives on to this very day, was Bull Lee.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Airdrie Studs Cairo Prince is the leading third crop sire by number of stakes winners, stakes horses, graded stakes winners, and graded stakes horses. He's also a top five general sire by the number of two-year-old winners so far in 2020. And his current crop of yearlings is his first conceived at a $25,000 stud fee. Yearlings from Cairo Prince's fourth crop sold for up to $400,000 this year, underlining his incredible commercial appeal. At $15,000 stands and nurses for 2021, Cairo Prince is value in the extreme, standing at Airdrie Stud. Think about it.
In 1993, Dr. John West showed that EIPH occurs during exercise when blood vessels in the lungs rupture. This is due to stress caused by high blood pressure on the inside of the vessels and strong suction forces on the outside. Only flare strips and Lasix, used together or alone, have been clinically proven to reduce EIPH. Lasix works by reducing the high internal pressures, and flare strips work by reducing the suction forces on the outside. See the science at flarestrips.com.
Recognized for raising and selling racehorses, Millridge has raised or sold 8 Breeders' Cup winners since 2000, including Oscar Performance. Now in his third year at stud at Millridge, covering 118 mares in his first year and 116 in his second. Since 2000, Millridge has raised or sold 35 Grade 1 winners and associates with leading breeders. Included in this year's Keeneland November sale are broodmare offerings from Judmont Farms and leading breeder George Strawbridge, all selling without reserve. Millridge, raising and selling racehorses.
Hello, I'm Junior Alvarado, and I listen to HRRN.
Authentic just breezing through the stretch. Opens up to lead it by 3 lengths. New York Traffic trying so hard, and he is closing the gap now. Here comes New York Traffic after Authentic. Authentic, New York Traffic are going to hit it together. Here it is. Photo finish, Authentic and New York Traffic.
As they come to the final furlong, Authentic is dragging in. Tis the Law all out to get by him. Authentic and John Velasquez have the lead as they come down to the 16th ball. Tis the Law still trying to get him. Authentic, Tis the Law, here's the buyer. Authentic has won the Kentucky Derby.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on HRRN. Mike Penna back with you on this Breeders' Cup edition of the show. Authentic, two-thirds of the way home to getting a $1 million bonus, courtesy of the Betmakers Bonanza, that in conjunction with Dennis Drazen at Monmouth Park. Any horse that is able to sweep the Haskell, the Kentucky Derby, and the Breeders' Cup Classic, at least here in 2020, that's the way the schedule fell, so those are the three designated races. Any horse able to sweep all three of those gets a $1 million bonus, courtesy of the folks at Betmakers, and what a wonderful promotion that is. I believe this will take place for another 3 years, but I'm joined now by Dallas Baker from Betmakers, who will fill you in on the details there. But Dallas, boy, Authentic, if he can capture that race later today, the Breeders' Cup Classic, going to pocket a cool $1 million. Not too bad, my friend.
No, it isn't. Good morning, Mike, and thank you very much for having me on your show. Yeah, it's exciting, isn't it? We've been working with Dennis Drazen for the last over 12 months, and this was an opportunity that Dennis saw when, obviously, with the calendar changing due to the everything that went on with COVID, and when the usual Triple Crown was obviously a whole different set of circumstances for this year. And we thought, you know, in conjunction with Dennis, thought, you know, what would be a good way to try to do something a bit different. And so we came up with what seemed at the time, you think, oh, well, this seems a very big task. But, you know, as we sit here a few hours from Breeders' Cup Day number two, it's alive and well and go Authentic. Yeah, so by winning the Haskell, as we've just heard the replay there, and winning the Derby, he's now well and truly alive to win an extra $1 million bonus. Not that he's got anything else going on with a win today, which should probably, you know, guarantee him horse of the year, 3 year old of the year, and with that, and then on top of that, the prize money that's available here today. So there's a few things Authentic's running for today.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And best of luck to our friends at Spendthrift Farm, MyRacehorse.com, and Madigat Stables and the entire ownership group involved with Derby winner Authentic. Again, if he takes the Breeders' Cup Classic later today, he gets $1 million bonus courtesy of the Betmakers Bonanza. Dallas, there are going to be people listening now going, okay, well, what on earth is Betmakers? So fill us in on the details of Betmakers.
Well, actually, it's a pretty good name because essentially we drive a lot of the global ways the bookmakers take bets, and we act as the sort of the piece of the puzzle in between racetracks and bookmakers around the world. So the reason that we're here in the US, that our original foray with Dennis into a venture with him is to bring fixed odds betting into New Jersey to start with and then hopefully spread it out across the US. We've been working methodically on that to make sure it's the best deal for everyone involved and most importantly that the industry gets their fair whack back out of it. It's a model that we followed that we're following that was introduced in Australia probably around about 10 or 12 years ago. And in that time, by deregulating wagering operators to be able to take fixed odds betting online, that basically has seen a doubling in the handle, where the tote has pretty much stayed the same and all that growth has come from fixed odds betting. But the most important thing to the industry is in that time, purse levels have also doubled. So the return to owners, which obviously then has all the trickle-down effects to trainers, jockeys, vets, everybody else who's all the multitude of people who rely on their income in this great industry of the horse racing industry, that obviously then has a trickle-down effect. And what we saw in Australia is when the Australian industry was gradually on the decline, with heavily reliant on tote betting, which was going down year after year. This really re-injected it. It reinvigorated it, and we've gone from a place in Australia where it was just ticking along to now it's actually absolutely booming. So that's what we're hoping to bring in. So that's one of the main functions as far as the US goes for betmakers.
So with fixed odds wagering, if, for example, Authentic, who is 6-1 on the morning line right now, if I were to bet Authentic at that 6-1 and he drops down to 2-1, I still get him at the 6-1 that I bet him, correct?
Absolutely, Mike, and I can tell you now that, so basically, just using Authentic as the example, so the markets, the global bookmakers all around the world are betting fixed odds on all of these Breeders' Cup races, and they probably went up when the fields came out on Monday night. So basically by Tuesday morning our time, most of the races were being bet on, and by at least Thursday, all of the races were up and being bet on. So at the moment, so Authentic actually opened up in early markets at about 5-1, and this is one of the great things about the fixed odds betting. It becomes a race in itself to get the right price, to know when to bet, and to take that price, lock that price in. But that market fluctuates like a stock exchange or any other betting market, but you can just lock in that price as it goes. And in the Breeders' Cup Classic, which is actually an interesting story in itself, is that Tis the Law and Authentic have both been the horses that have blown out a bit. So the early markets are being a bit against the three-year-olds. Tis the Law opened up at around about a 3-1 chance. It's out to 9-2 now. And Authentic opened up at 11-2, and it's out to 7-1. And most of that is because Tom's Detat's been the best backed runner, 8-1 into about 4-1. So whilst you lock it in, you have got a fluid market, which changes due to the popularity, generally on the weight of money that has come for a horse or that hasn't come for a horse. So it's fluid, it's active, it's exciting, and taking the right price becomes a skill in itself to not just finding the winner, but actually backing the winner at the right price.
Yeah, it's fantastic. What a great concept. And visiting, by the way, with Dallas Baker from Betmakers Technology Group, and they are working on introducing fixed odds wagering, as you heard him say, into the state of New Jersey, and then once it's up and running there, hopefully spreading out across the United States to other states as well. Dallas, in terms of where things stand right now with the legislative process and everything that's happening with the fixed odds wagering in New Jersey, where are we and how soon might we see this come to fruition?
Well, I think the most important thing is to have been to make sure the whole process is done right. For this to come up into Australia, it was years of court battles to and from, and it was a big distraction to the industry, I think is fair enough to say, from both sides of the aisle who were fighting that. So we wanted to make sure that we're working with a great partner in Dennis Drazen at Monmouth Park, who obviously, for those who don't know, Dennis was one of the main driving forces for having the PASPA laws repealed, just over 2 years ago now, with sports betting being able to come in. And basically, so to go through the process, it's a long process to do it to make sure it's right. So we've got to the stage, when was it, last week, that legislation has been dropped in both the Senate and the Legislative Assembly here in New Jersey. So that's now through the typical governmental processing to go to a committee level next week, and then, you know, go to and from the debating stages. So the bill's been dropped, and now it's up to the stages of all of those committees to go through it.
Well, I know you put a lot of work into this, Dallas, you and the entire team at BetMakers, and Dennis Drazen, as you mentioned, at Monmouth Park, and it is so close now, you can almost taste it. Is it starting to get to that point where you're like, all right, let's just get this over the hill and push it over the top and get this thing rolling?
Oh, my goodness, absolutely. I mean, we're keen just to get it up. Obviously, you know, once you've been working on something like that, the end result is what you're working towards. And to be able to hopefully see a multitude of bookmakers in New Jersey start betting on fixed odds. And look, it's been a lot, obviously, with COVID, it's been a slower path than we would have thought this year. But I think that goes for just about everything in the world. But, it's very exciting as we're getting closer to it. And hopefully in coming chats, we'll be talking about a bookmaker X or bookmaker Y has just taken a $10,000 bet on improbable today, and that's what we're talking about. Rather than talking about the theory, it's going to be great to talk about it in action. And that's one of the great things you got, because the betting opens so early, it becomes a story in itself. So, like today, if we were having this conversation, hopefully in a couple of months, where everything's up and rolling, is that we'll be talking about, you know, big bets on this horse, or this horse opened up 1-2 and it's now blown out to 2-1, and so it's obviously not popular on the boards, and it gives you a real indication about where the smart money is going, and it becomes a game in itself, reading and understanding how the market works. So, yes,
how many other countries? How many other countries, Dallas, allow fixed odds wagering now?
Just about every major country. Hong Kong still paramutual only. France are moving towards it, but basically, UK, Australia. One of the main reasons why we recognised the marketplace in the US was really fertile and really probably could do with a different arm to it rather than just paramutual. In the US, obviously, you've got around about 330 million people. And there's only around about, well, when I say only, it's still a significant number, about $10 billion invested on horse racing across the board. In Australia, we have 25 million people, and we invest $25 billion on horse racing. Now, we are sick, degenerate gamblers in Australia. When I say in Australia, I'm talking to you from New Jersey. But as Australians, we are awful gamblers, but a lot of that is based on the fact that there is the fixed odds market, which opens it up to the same way that people now have become educated in betting on sports. So they know that, you know, if they take 2-1 about the Dallas Cowboys beating the San Francisco 49ers, that's their price. And with that market becoming so huge, then you can have the racing market actually bounce off that as well too, as part of the client base of bookmakers.
Well, fascinating stuff. Again, watch for the legislation and the hopeful fixed odds wagering coming to New Jersey soon. And watch for Authentic later today in the Breeders' Cup Classic as he goes for that $1 million BetMakers Bonanza bonus. And it would be great to see him pocket that money. Of course, it would add to Bob Baffert's legacy. He's won the race 3 times. That's a record. He's looking for 4 with the Derby winner, Authentic. He won the Haskell. He won the Derby. And now he's looking for that Breeders' Cup Classic victory. Dallas listener, really appreciate the visit. Whenever I can get the Aussie accent on the program, I'm always happy to do it. I just want you to know, you only got the call today because Jason Day was busy prepping for the Masters next week.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. Well, it's sort of, there's a few things going on in Atlanta, Georgia at the moment, isn't there? It's normally, from the outsider looking in, it's normally the Masters, but there's a little other contest going on there at the moment, isn't there? So it's all eyes on Atlanta at the moment.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Dallas, listen, appreciate the visit, and congratulations on the success that you're having with BetMakers, and all the best with that legislation. Let's go ahead and get it over the top and get it active in New Jersey. Can't wait.
Yeah, and I think it's good for the industry. I know a lot. There's probably, you know, obviously when you're doing something like this, you get pushback, and a lot of people are worried about the term that we hear a lot is cannibalize the tote, but we know from international markets and our experiences and lots of studies that actually if it is brought in effectively, it actually should only enhance the levels of the tote as well too. So it should bump that up, but it then just gets a whole nother chunk of money that's available to be invested in racing through wagering, which is then be able to be invested back into the industry to make it better and not only sustain it, but to actually get it booming.
Wonderful. All the best, Dallas. Good luck with that, and thanks for taking the time this morning.
Thanks, Mike, and go authentic.
Go authentic. That'll be a popular sentiment with so many of the folks associated with the Horse Racing Radio Network. As I told you, Spendthrift Farm, one of our sponsors, of course, Authentic Buy Their Stallion Into Mischief, MyRacehorse.com, another sponsor here of the network. It'll be a popular win for everybody associated with the HRN family if Authentic can pull it off. All right, going to get to another break. When I come back, I will talk a little bit more Breeders' Cup, but get you set for the second half of the program as well. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the 2020 Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup.
There's a corner of Kentucky in Bourbon County, which some refer to as the Promised Land. There's something in the soil and water that make it something special. So special that some of the world's greatest horsemen have staked their claim in the soil just outside of Paris. Iconic names such as Claiborne, Coolmore, Stone, and Darley grace the fence lines which have housed champions for generations. The name Alapa shines as a tribute to the Gilded Age, sharing the stature and grandeur of its neighbors. Born from the wealth, passion, and imagination of Edward Sims, no expense was spared to fulfill his vision. Sims was in the same league as John Madden and Arthur B. Hancock Sr. as a commercial breeder. The torch has been passed. Welcome to Hill and Dale at Alapa.
46 Solutions makes technology easy. We manage the day-to-day technology needs of Kentucky businesses by offering 24/7 help desk support, infrastructure design, and cybersecurity protection to keep your focus on your business. Our residential engineers can design and install media rooms, home theaters, and make sure your home Wi-Fi network runs smoothly with the best speeds available. Visit 46solutions.com today. 46 Solutions is your technology partner.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonySteaksandSeafood.com.
McKinsey, new for 2021 at Gainesway. The son of Kentucky Derby winner Street Sense, McKinsey was named a TDN Rising Star following his five-length debut victory at Santa Anita and was an undefeated Grade 1 winning two-year-old, the fastest juvenile of 2017. McKinsey scored four Grade 1 victories in his career with Grade 1 wins at 2, 3, and 4.
Furlong to go. McKinsey is in front. Axelrod set down by Joe Bravo. Mike Smith working on McKinsey. McKinsey holding on. Axelrod is full out. McKinsey is clear as they come down to the finish. Baffert, Smith, McKinsey, they've done it. McKinsey has it by two.
Coming to the final furlong, McKinsey's in front. Yoshida runs after him on the outside. Vino Rosso is third. McKinsey comes by the 16th pole, and he's going to do it. McKinsey has won the Whitney.
11 triple-digit buyer speed figures. Earnings over $3.4 million. McKinsey standing at Gainesway.
I'm Manny Franco, and I listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They spin the corner. Regal Reality. Magical is well poised there in second place. Foxtel, Adayev. Then Deirdre's off the inside now. Coronet, he says go on Magical on the outside of Regal Reality. Foxtel gets up the rail. Magical strikes the front from Foxtel. Here's Adayev putting in a sterling run out wide. Deirdre's got plenty to find. Magical from Adayev inside the final furlong. Magical by three-quarters of a length to Adayev, who's trying hard. Then Foxtel, but Magical is tough as they come. And Magical is going to cling on and win the Champions Stakes and a second win on Champions Day. Adayev in second, tight for third between Foxtel and Deirdre.
Huge win by Magical in the Irish Champions Stakes back on September 12th at Leopardstown. One of two horses trained by Aidan O'Brien in this afternoon's Breeders' Cup Turf, which is the race preceding the Breeders' Cup Classic. Aidan has won that race more than any trainer in the history of the Breeders' Cup. He is looking for his seventh victory in the turf later today, his most recent coming in 2016 with Highland Reels. So it's been a few years, which we're not used to seeing from Aidan, but he has a good chance with Magical, who is 5-2 on the morning line later this afternoon. Equine Forum question of the day: which horse or horses are you most looking forward to wagering on in today's Breeders' Cup races? You can wager. You can let us know at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, or you can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net, and let me know who you think is the horse or horses to bet on later today. Serengeti Empress getting a vote. Tis the Law talked about him being maybe the forgotten horse in today's classic. One listener says, after yesterday's upsets of Mortal Locks, no way I am betting the farm or anyone on anyone looking forward to the races. Serengeti Empress getting another vote. So a couple votes for Serengeti Empress. The folks at Pin Oak Stud will be happy about that, the daughter of Alternation. Looking forward to betting the Distaff. Looking forward to betting Swiss Skydiver as she goes in the Distaff. She was qualified for the Classic 2. The Connection's opting to go to the Distaff instead, and we'll see if she can pull it off. One scratch coming out just a short time ago? No, not a scratch? Is it a scratch? Oh, several scratches. Oh, they're here. Okay. I wonder, my beautiful wife, Michelle, passing this along. Several scratches. I have a minute here. Pass these along to you as well. In the Filly and Mare Sprint, race number 4 today. That's the first race, first Breeders' Cup race of the afternoon. In the Midst of Biz, number 4, is out of that race. In the Midst of Biz, scratch from the Filly and Mare Sprint. In the Turf Sprint, race 5, both of the also eligibles not drawing in, Equilateral and Chaos Theory, both scratched, as are Arcadust and Bulletproof 1. So 15, 16, 17, and 18 in the Turf Sprint. Four horses scratched from there, all of them on the also eligible list. In the sixth race, the AE, I believe it's Zhang Zhang is how you pronounce that. Number 13, Zhang Zhang, not drawing into the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. So you can scratch Zhang Zhang there. In the seventh race, there were no changes. That's the Filly and Mare Turf. The Breeders' Cup Sprint, race 8, Vekoma. That was announced earlier this week. Vekoma is out. That means that number 15, Lasting Legacy for Bob Hess Jr., will draw into the field. So keep that in mind. So we still have a field of 14 going there as Vekoma is scratched, but number 15, Lasting Legacy, gets in. The Breeders' Cup Mile, scratched number 9, One Master from the barn of William Haggis. That means that Order of Australia does get in. And I told you earlier that Christophe Soumillon, who tested positive for COVID, was scheduled to ride Order of Australia in the Breeders' Cup Mile today. He is not obviously doing that. Pierre-Charles Boudot will replace Christophe Soumillon in the Breeders' Cup Mile aboard Order of Australia, who draws in from the also eligible list. No changes in the Distaff, no changes in the Turf, and no changes in the Classic. So that gets you up to date as of 9 a.m. Eastern time on this Saturday morning with everything happening with the Breeders' Cup and the scratches and changes that have taken place here today. This is WinStar Week, by the way, here on the network. We have been celebrating WinStar Week all week long, and with good reason. You look at the Breeders' Cup Classic today, there are three future Windstar Stallions in the Classic going to be joining the roster after their careers are concluded. You have Global Campaign, Improbable, and Tom's d'Etat. And you heard Al Stahl right around 8:15 Eastern talking about Tom's d'Etat. And he feels like, at least in their minds anyways, he's even money. I think 6-1 is too high. You heard Dallas Baker from BetMaker say that with the fixed odds wagering around the world, we're seeing Tom's d'Etat take the majority of the money, going from 8-1 down to 4-1. So all signs pointing toward a big run for Tom's d'Etat, and I know that that is music to the ears of the folks at Windstar. Again, you can go to windstarfarm.com if you want to check out their entire stallion roster. It is spectacular. And our thanks to Elliot Walden and the team at Windstar for all of their support throughout the week. We have been celebrating Windstar Week with highlights from some of their current stallions and future stallions, and it's been a lot of fun. And you can head back and listen to the interview that was done with Elliot Thursday morning. That's on our website at horseracingradio.net. All right, second half of the program kicks off with Marty McGee from the Daily Racing Forum. He'll look back on what happened with the Breeders' Cup yesterday and look ahead to some of the top storylines to keep an eye on today. And then my interview with announcers Larry Colmus and Kurt Becker, looking back on calling the 2015 Breeders' Cup Classic. That was a really fun interview and some fascinating information coming out from both announcers. So make sure you stay tuned for what promises to be a very busy second half of the show. It begins next, right after I pause, 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Tis the Law's got a two-length lead. Dr. Post has moved up on the outside into second. Pneumatic is third, but it is the New York Hero, Tis the Law and Manny Franco to win the Belmont Stakes.
But it's Improbable who has taken command with an authoritative run. From last to first, what a star Improbable has turned into as he is going to romp in the awesome again.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
And Honor AP runs right by Authentic. And Odor at the rail and Rushy, a 16th to go. Honor AP a length and a half. Authentic, Rushy running on late. It will be Honor AP, a very impressive winner of the Run Happy Santa Anita Derby.
Tom's d'Etat shaken up to a three-length lead. By My Standards is trying hard, but he's still second. Silver Dust is third. Multiplier trying to come on late for fourth, but with a 16th to go, it's total domination for Tom's d'Etat.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum on this Breeders' Cup edition here in 2020. One of the few events of thoroughbred racing that was contested when it was supposed to be run this year. November 6th and 7th, day two coming up. Five races in the books yesterday. Nine more championship races set to come this afternoon. Our coverage begins at noon Eastern. We'll have you covered wire to wire from the first race to the last. You can tune in noon Eastern, Sirius 219, XM 201 on our affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country. Happy to bring it your way for, well, gosh, I guess it's about the 14th consecutive year. Every year since 2007, we have had the privilege of providing you with exclusive radio coverage of the Breeders' Cup Championship races, and happy to do it again for you this afternoon if you can't be in front of a television. Poll question, which horse or horses are you most looking forward to wagering on in today's Breeders' Cup? Let me know at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, or email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. If you missed any portion of the first half of the program or any of our shows this week, including yesterday's Weekend Stakes Preview presented by Naira Betts with Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman, where they walk through each and every Breeders' Cup race coming up later today, all you have to do is head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast at your leisure. My interviews in the first half of the program with Al Stahl Jr. talking about Tom's d'Etat and Dallas Baker from BetMakers talking about that $1 million bonus, the BetMakers Bonanza, that Authentic will run for in the Breeders' Cup Classic later today. Well, you know, every week I have the privilege of honoring one of our guests as the industry star of the week, and it's usually somebody that does great work behind the scenes. Now, I wouldn't call Marty McGee and Daily Racing Form behind the scenes by any stretch of the imagination, but Marty has been doing yeoman's work covering our sport for many, many years. He's fantastic. You can catch him on Daily Racing Form and on Twitter. He does the Daily Racing Form Twitter as well for himself. He is just tremendous, and he'll be covering the Breeders' Cup races live from Keeneland later this afternoon. He is our industry star of the week. This segment brought to you by Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years that include Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, and South Bend, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all the major sales. And without further ado, our industry star of the week, Marty McGee from the Daily Racing Form, joining me live from Keeneland. Marty, good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Mike. Those are very kind words from you. I appreciate them, and I can only think of our man Pete. Right now, he would be enjoying the scene here at Keeneland, talking about the tender tendrils of the autumn weather and the E-Crew racing surface here that's primed for some fast going today for the Breeders' Cup.
Great memory. Mother Nature reaching down with tender tendrils to paint the countryside was one of his signature lines. I'll never forget it.
Oh, yeah. Well, and E-Crew, which is always, by the way, a crossword answer because of those, the unique letters there. But Pete is missed.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And thanks for bringing that up, Marty. And every word that I said is extremely well meant, for sure. And I mean every word of it, because you have been covering this sport and doing it at a very high level for a very long time. Talk to me about what you saw yesterday on Breeders' Cup Friday. I guess we'll call it Future Stars Friday. What were some of the things that stood out most to you?
Well, Brad Cox clearly was the star of the day by winning both the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf with Aunt Pearl, and then coming right back at another 40 minutes later with Essential Quality and the, I guess, would be the feature race of the Future Stars Friday, the Juvenile. And Brad seems like he's in line for maybe another win today with Monomoy Girl, but I thought it was a terrific day of racing. It was just a shame that the fans couldn't have been here. They would have been jamming this place and having a heck of a time. I guess they had, Mike, maybe 3,000 or 4,000, but it was fairly crowded, given the limitations of the crowd. But terrific day of racing. They were calling the turf course good. I don't know if they're going to call it firm or good today. I mean, we haven't had rain here since the 29th of October, and yet, this being the autumn and the cooler temperatures, the moisture has been retained somewhat in the turf course. But overall, it was a terrific day of racing. The Maker horse was hard to come up with in the Juvenile Turf. He was a 30-1 shot and kind of ruined some multis that I had going. I very much overlooked him, even though he won the Pilgrim. But you had your usual mix of long shots like him, and then more logical horses like Aunt Pearl and Essential Quality, and Vquist, I thought, got a tremendous ride from Joel Rosario, never leaving the fence. I actually had envisioned that exact trip for Simply Ravishing from the one hole, but you never know when they're going to stumble. She stumbled just ever so momentarily out of the gate, and that cost her position and the race ultimately. You never know what's going to happen when they open these gates, and we're looking forward to more of the same kind of frenetic action here at Keeneland.
You know, Marty, you've listened to this program enough where you know that I always like to give a countdown, and usually it's a countdown to the Breeders' Cup, but I can't do that because the Breeders' Cup is here, so I threw this out at the top of the show. 175 days, 8 hours, 36 minutes, and 23 seconds until the Run for the Roses next year at Churchill Downs. I was shocked when I started doing some homework for the program to learn that Brad Cox, despite all of his success, has yet to have a starter in the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, he had a couple, I'm trying to think, maybe 3 or 4 years ago he had one that he probably could have run. This year he could have run Shared Sense and opted not to, and that was probably a good decision. So I think he's waiting to have one who's going to be less than 10-1 before he actually runs one. So it looks like he might well have that for Godolphin with the Essential Quality. Man, he was really good yesterday.
Yeah, how about Godolphin? All those years trying to win it with Kieran, who one of the top trainers that we've seen in the sport, and you know, coming up short, and now Brad Cox with Essential Quality could potentially give them their first Kentucky Derby victory. How special would that be?
That would be awesome. I mean, they've been trying it since, I'm trying to think of the horse's name. It was 1999 when they said, we're going to make a concerted effort to run and win in the Derby. I think they've had maybe close to a dozen starters, Mike, and haven't really come close. So I would think that they're pretty excited about this. You know, they had Maxfield if they had run it last year. No, excuse me, in September they had Maxfield, but he got hurt in June. So he's still undefeated. And actually, he's been on the work tab a couple times now. So they probably got a good four-year-old with Maxfield too.
Talking with Marty McGee from the Daily Racing Forum, covering racing here throughout the Bluegrass, and as I told you, been doing it for many, many years. Marty, how about this afternoon's Breeders' Cup races? 9 championship races coming up. What are some of the storylines that people should keep an eye on later today?
Well, the very first Breeders' Cup goes at 12:02, and it looks like we're going to have a massive speed duel between Gamine, who's the program favorite, and Serengeti Empress, the older filly. You've also got Venetian Harbor in that mix, and will it set up for a closer or not? That's the decision that the bettors have to make right away. After that, we've got another real quick race, Mike, with the turf sprint. Then we have the dirt mile. I think that Nick's go in Brad Cox's hand will be very dangerous. He's going to be my pick in there. And then we go on down to Ivar for my Joe Talamo. I'm a huge fan. You know, he's married to my niece, Elizabeth, and nobody has a bigger fan than Joe Talamo than myself, so I'm for Ivar and Paulo Lobo in the mile. Monomoy Girl for Cox right after that versus Swiss Skydiver, the heroine of the Preakness. The turf is always just a tremendous race. You know, the sun is getting low in the horizon, and you feel like the end is near, and you have all the European representation, and it's kind of a unique race in that it's 3 turns. Magical, the mare who has spent a lot of her career chasing Enable, she ought to win that in my mind. And then Tom's Detat, who was 6-1 on the morning line of the Classic, I think he's even the favorite in the double, the Juvenile Classic double. I'm thinking like more like 3-1 on Tom's Detat in there, and I'm really rooting for Al Stahl in there.
Yeah, it's going to be a fantastic day. You mentioned Joe Talamo, and every time I hear his name, I think back to 2007, I think it was. Maybe it was even 2006 when we were first starting the network, and we made our first trip to New Orleans to broadcast the Louisiana Derby. And Joe was a bug boy, and he won the riding title. I believe he was the first bug boy ever to win the riding title at Fairgrounds. And he sat down with us for an interview on the same show, the Equine Forum. And I was so blown away and so impressed. And I've never forgotten that interview with Joe. And I don't think he's ever forgotten it either. It was one of the first interviews that he ever did on whether national TV, national radio, whatever it was. And he took the time to do that. And I've been a huge Joe Talamo fan ever since. Not to mention the fact he's one hell of a rider.
Yeah. I mean, he's put on just in the last week or so, he's put on a couple of fantastic rides and winning races at Churchill Downs. And I got to echo what you said, Mike. I mean, he is such a sweetheart, and I just went over. He and Elizabeth just bought a house in Louisville recently, and I went over to the house for the first time Wednesday or Thursday night and spent a little time with him. And it's funny you mentioned 2006 in your first interview with him, because Bob Fortas, the late Bob Fortas of the New Orleans Times-Picayune, very prominent in their new house. They have a big story that Bob had written, framed and everything, about Joe being born to do what he did. And here we are, what, 14 years later, and he's still doing it well. And he has won one Breeders' Cup race before. It was on California Flag down the hill at Santa Anita, I think in 2009, or maybe a little bit later than that. But anyway, it'd be great to see him pick up a second Breeders' Cup win here today on Ivar.
Yeah, I love having you on the show, Marty. You take me on a trip down memory lane. You start with Pete Kulis. You talk about Bob Fortas. All these unbelievable people that have been part of your life and my life and part of the sport of thoroughbred racing. I'll give you another one. I was looking back on some of the racing history highlights, and on this day, November 7th, 1998, in the Breeders' Classic, awesome again, won the Classic that year, defeated Skipaway. Skipaway was retired after that race. There are so many moments in Breeders' Cup history that stand out, and that's certainly one of them.
It is, and, you know, that was a great race, and they say that depth-wise, that 1998 Classic field was one of the best ever. I would agree with that. My favorite, and I swear, Mike, every time I hear Tom Durkin's call of the 87 Breeders' Cup Classic, I get goosebumps. And it's amazing what these races do to us over the long term. I mean, that's been 33 years, and still I get goosebumps. When you go back to that crowd at Hollywood Park just in full voice, and Ali Sheba and Ferdinand coming to the wire together. It's just the kind of thing that that's what we're here for, is to enjoy and revel in those kind of moments.
How about this one for you? It was also on this day in 1998, November 7th, that jockey Richard Migliori gained his 3,000th career victory aboard Bell's Appeal in the second race at Aqueduct. Now, he wasn't in the Breeders' Cup that year. He went on to retire with 4,450 wins. So the Mig getting number 3,000 on this day.
Well, you know what, Richie, he's such a great ambassador for the sport. He kind of reminds me of the late Joe Morgan in that he had a phenomenal playing career, but he might be known even more so for what he did afterwards in terms of relating the sport to the general public, and I think he does a phenomenal job.
You can follow Marty McGee at DRF McGee, McGee, at DRF McGee on Twitter. Of course, writer for the Daily Racing Form, covers Kentucky racing for DRF, and has done it for a very, very long time. Marty, I threw out a question of the day on our Twitter and our Facebook, and people are emailing the show, but the question of the day: which horse or horses are you most looking forward to wagering on in today's Breeders' Cup races? So give me one or two of the Marty McGee best bet, can't lose, bet the farm. You got two farms, bet them both, mortal lock, complete cinch. Who are they?
Well, I'm going to lean on Monomoy Girl and some horizontals, the late pick four, the late pick five. She's going to be my single. I mean, I'm not being very imaginative there, Mike, because she's going to be about even money. But I'll lean on her and Ivar mostly. And then Frenzy Fire is kind of my sleeper in the sprint, which is race eight. I really thought that Vekoma was going to win that race, but of course he scratched earlier in the week. So I'm on Kelly Breen and Frenzy Fire. I think Mean Mary has a shot in the Philly Mare Turf. She's got to be 6 or 8 to 1, I would think. And again, Nick's Go, I'm really in on him because of the way he ran for Cox last time out.
This interview with Marty McGee and all of our interviews on the program brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion by visiting EmbraceTheRace.com. And Marty, our industry star of the week, presented by Stuart Morris. Marty, appreciate the visit. Enjoy day two of the Breeders' Cup. It's always fun to catch up.
It's awesome. Thanks a whole lot, Mike. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks. Marty McGee here on HRRN. I'll get to another break. I'll tell you what's ahead on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Warfront. This son of Danzig ranks among the world's elite sires. With grade one winners on dirt and turf and star performers both at home and abroad, Warfront's success as an international super sire is unmatched. Recent stars include War of Will, a classic winner on dirt and now a grade one winner on turf, plus Halliday, winner of the grade one four-star Dave Handicap at Saratoga. In the auction ring, his progeny continue to command top dollar. Warfront, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Churchill Downs hosts their 131st fall meet running through Sunday, November 29th. Highlights include the 146th running of the Grade 1 Clark presented by Norton Healthcare on Black Friday, November 27th, and a second Stars of Tomorrow program on Saturday, November 28th, featuring the Grade 2 Kentucky Jockey Club and Grade 2 Goldenrod. In total, the fall meet showcases 10 stakes races, 8 of those graded, offering purses of nearly $1.8 million. Big money, big fields. October 25th to November 29th at Churchill Downs.
There's a corner of Kentucky in Bourbon County, which some refer to as the Promised Land. There's something in the soil and water that make it something special. So special that some of the world's greatest horsemen have staked their claim in the soil just outside of Paris. Iconic names such as Claiborne, Coolmore, Stone, and Darley grace the fence lines which have housed champions for generations. The name Alapa shines as a tribute to the Gilded Age, sharing the stature and grandeur of its neighbors. Born from the wealth, passion, and imagination of Edward Sims, no expense was spared to fulfill his vision. Sims was in the same league as John Madden and Arthur B. Hancock Sr. as a commercial breeder. The torch has been passed. Welcome to Hill and Dale at Alapa.
This is Florent Giroux, and you are listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Mana Boy Girl is taking the lead at the top of the stretch. Blue Prize runs at her. The two of them turn for home with Midnight Bizu, third on the outside. 3/16 to go. Mana Boy Girl to catch. Florent Giroux goes to an all-out drive. Blue Prize trying to stick with her. Midnight Bizu continues to move down the center. Mana Boy Girl is 16th to go. Blue Prize, Wildcat finishing well on the inside. Then comes Midnight Bizu. Mana Boy Girl has won the distance. Wildcat came late for a second, then Midnight Bizu and Blue Prize. And Abel Tasman was last under the wire.
Larry Combs with the call of the 2018 Breeders' Cup Distaff. Mana Boy Girl getting the victory. She's back. Back after an 18-month layoff. Tried to get her back throughout that 18 months. Didn't happen. She came back with a vengeance here in 2020. Just destroying the competition. She figures to be a tough out later today in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. The 2018 Distaff champion looking to just add to her championship legacy. Here's what's coming up this afternoon. You have the Filly and Mare Sprint, which will be first, and then the Turf Sprint follows that at 12:39. The Dirt Mile at 1:18. These are all Eastern times, by the way. The Filly and Mare Turf at 1:57. You have trainer Chad Brown sending out a pair of Breeders' Cup winners in that one. Sister Charlie, who won the Filly and Mare Turf 2 years ago, and Rushing Fall, who is a juvenile Filly's Turf winner. You have the Sprint at 2:36. The Mile, this is going to be a good one. It always is. I mean, they're all good, but the Mile at 3:15 featuring 6-year-old mare Uni looking to defend her title against the boys in that race. I told you about the Distaff. That's at 3:54. The Turf at 4:33, and at 5:18 Eastern, that's post time for the Breeders' Cup Classic. $6 million on the line, 7 if you're authentic. Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert looking to add to his record 3 wins in the race when he sends out the powerful trio of Maximum Security, last year's champion 3-year-old, authentic winner of the Kentucky Derby, and Improbable. All of those going from the barn of Bob Baffert. But as I told you earlier, and you heard it in my interview with Dallas Baker from BetMakers, the money, in a lot of instances, coming in on Tom's d'etat. Al Stahl Jr. joined me in the first half of the program right before Dallas and talked about Tom's d'etat. And as he said, he's more of the 7-year-old is more of a player's coach at this point. I said, Al, trainers are kind of like basketball coaches, or any coach really, where they bring their players along, get them to peak, teach them, get them to peak on certain days. And he said, well, the 7-year-old Tom's d'etat is more of a player's coach at this point. He doesn't have to do a whole heck of a lot with them. And he's taking a lot of money, and he figures to be very dangerous in that race this afternoon. Our coverage kicks off at noon Eastern. Myself, Bobby Newman, and Ashley Mayhew bring you coverage of all 9 Breeders' Cup Championship races. We'll take you all the way through that Breeders' Cup Classic at 5:18 Eastern time. Noon to 5:30, Sirius 219, XM 201, affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country, and streaming worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. And a reminder, too, before you play the races today, we're sitting here at 9:23 Eastern time right now. You still have time to head over to our website and listen to the Weekend Stakes Preview presented by Naira Betts, where Anthony and Bobby Newman went through every Breeders' Cup race on this Saturday card, made their selections for you, gave you their analysis. Head over there now, take a listen to that, and then go bet the races and win some money at Keeneland later today. All right, when I come back, going to look back on the 2015 Breeders' Cup Classic, the only other time Breeders' Cup was run here in Lexington, Kentucky at Keeneland. American Pharoah, his final career start. You'll hear from the two announcers who called that race, Larry Colmus on NBC, Kurt Becker on radio on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
This is Windstar Week on HRRN, celebrating the horses of Windstar Farm.
Consistently versatile, with 19 Grade 1 winners on every surface, from 6 furlongs to 1.25 miles, all over the world. 3 new Grade 1 winners in 2020.
Echo Town wins the Allen Turkey Stakes.
And Lady Spike Spear has gone on to win the Natalba by 3/4, Alda.
All purpose, all places, all power, Spike Town.
Standing at Windstar Farm.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Adina Spring Stallion Mucho Macho Man. Tough, sound, durable. A stakes winner at 3, 4, 5, and 6 who competed in all three Triple Crown races before turning 3 years old and capped a stellar career with a determined victory in the Breeders' Cup Classic over champions Will Take Charge and Declaration of War.
Mucho Macho Man has the lead close to home! Mucho Macho Man, Declaration of War! Will Take Charge and Final Man! Mucho Macho Man!
Mucho Macho Man has produced 2 first crop grade 1 winners, one on dirt.
Mucho Gusto in the Pegasus World Cup. He won it by 5 lengths.
And one on turf.
And the California bred Mucho Unusual all the way in the Rodeo Drive.
The number one North American sire by 2020 average earnings per runner is Mucho Macho Man, standing at Adina Springs.
When a horse breathes in during exercise, a strong suction force is exerted on the outer walls of the fragile pulmonary capillaries. Think of it like a vacuum cleaner in the air sacs of the lungs, pulling on the outside walls of the capillaries. This, combined with high blood pressures inside the capillaries, causes the capillaries to rupture, resulting in EIPH. By reducing resistance when breathing in, flare strips turn down the suction on the vacuum cleaner in the lungs to reduce EIPH. See the evidence at flarestrips.com.
Recognized for raising and selling racehorses, Millridge has raised or sold 8 Breeders' Cup winners since 2000, including Oscar Performance. Now in his 3rd year at stud at Millridge, covering 118 mares in his 1st year and 116 in his 2nd. Since 2000, Millridge has raised or sold 35 Grade 1 winners and associates with leading breeders. Included in this year's Keeneland November sale are broodmare offerings from Judmont Farms and leading breeder George Strawbridge, all selling without reserve. Millridge, raising and selling racehorses.
Hi, this is Penelope Miller, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
American Pharoah, through it all, still in front, opens back up here by 2.5, 3 lengths to the top of the stretch. FNX continues to give chase, Frosted third, Totalist in fourth, 1/4 mile from home, and American Pharoah is into the stretch at Keeneland in the Breeders' Cup Classic. A 5-length lead as he comes to the 8th pole. FNX second, Frosted far back in third, Totalist is in fourth, into the final furlong. There will be a 4th jewel in the crown. He's an everlasting credit to the sport. American Pharoah has belted a grand slam in the Breeders' Cup Classic. He wins it in 2 minutes flat.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. That was Kurt Becker with the call of the 2015 Breeders' Cup Classic, American Pharoah, his final career start. That's the way it sounded for those of you who were tuned in to our radio broadcast. Larry Colmus, of course, had a different call on NBC for the television folks and took a little different approach than Kurt did to crafting the right words that were appropriate to sum up the occasion. And I had the opportunity to talk with both of those gentlemen earlier this week, and it was really fascinating to ask them about their approach, their philosophy, and what calling that race meant to them personally and to their careers. And Larry started the conversation by talking about his approach to calling that momentous race.
Anytime, Mike, I'm calling a big race with a level like that, any Breeders' Cup Classic or any Triple Crown race, but particularly one with a storyline like American Pharoah, you have to think of what you want to say, just because it off the cuff doesn't work as well, in my opinion. But you do want to sound off the cuff, you know, but have ideas in your head when the race goes on. And for some reason or another, I never really loved that term Grand Slam, and I just thought it was kind of a made up thing, just because it's never happened before. So I said, you know, to myself, well, let's leave Grand Slam out of this thing and come up with something else. And just that, you know, the whole idea was the fact that, you know, he was the Triple Crown winner, and, you know, and I wanted to get in, you know, little things like the fact that it was his last start. And so American Pharoah comes into his final furlong, and, you know, a Triple Crown winner, a Breeders' Cup winner, a horse of a lifetime was something that, you know, to me just kind of worked. And so we, you know, thought about different things like that and used a lot of them.
How much time did you spend trying to come up with the right words to capture that moment?
You know, a lot of times it just comes to you. And sometimes you don't like, you know, the different thoughts that, you know, what if it was this or what if it was that? And the whole keep it simple thing seems to work. And then, you know, I used it for the Belmont when American Pharoah, you know, the 37 year wait is over, finally the one. To me, that was like what everybody was thinking. And I try to take that same approach when you come to the Breeders' Cup, and obviously some thoughts come through your head, and then you say, we'll pass on that one. And then a lot of times it just pops into your head, and Triple Crown winner, Breeders' Cup winner, horse of a lifetime. I don't remember when it popped into my head, but I remember it did, and I wrote it down so that I wouldn't forget it. And luckily, American Pharoah, as he did throughout most of his career, gave me the opportunity to use that line, and it came out pretty well. I was just happy to, you know, that he went out the way he did.
Kurt, how about for you? What was your approach?
This was a difficult situation, and I will tell you why. It's because of the fact that I kept considering how can one describe American Pharoah by that point without using words others have already used? Or how do you not simply repeat what other people have already said? How do you simply not state or overstate the obvious about the horse? I thought that when Beholder was entered in the race, I saw her as the lone threat to him. I thought, okay, I could see these two getting into a pretty good battle down the stretch. And I thought maybe it'll take care of itself, because when that happens, you're so busy as a race announcer describing the action in that intense type of stretch run, the call tends to manufacture itself. Well, as we all know, of course, Beholder ended up scratching from the race, so then I was back to square one. That was my biggest concern. I actually went back on YouTube and pulled up calls from sportscasters in various sports. Went back, for example, and looked up the call of Hank Aaron's record-breaking home run and some record-breaking moments in the Super Bowl, and listened to announcers in other forms of sport to hear how they dealt with it. And I think that for me, I ultimately decided that my job as the track announcer at Keeneland was to give this horse a proper and fitting farewell. I thought, okay, we all know what's coming here. If he opens up in the stretch, I'm not going to act like I'm shocked. I'm not going to act like, wow, nobody saw this coming, because I thought we all know what's going to happen. So my main concern ultimately became, how can I give this horse a proper farewell as he goes off to the stud at a farm just down the road from Keeneland? how can I properly do that in a way that meets the dignity of the occasion? And that was the struggle for me in the days leading up to the race.
The words you ultimately chose as he was coming down the stretch: there will be a fourth jewel in the crown. He's an everlasting credit to the sport. American Pharoah has belted a grand slam in the Breeders' Cup Classic. Why did you feel those were the proper words to use to do what you just described and send him off properly?
The phrase, "there will be a fourth jewel in the crown," was something that had come to my mind one night at the start of that week, and I thought, okay, if my goal is to simply document what is happening, I thought that metaphor perhaps would be a good way to document that fact without me becoming excessive in my language or my description. Again, I knew by this point everybody knew the horse had won the Triple Crown, and I knew they didn't need me to tell them that, yet it's there. You've got to acknowledge it somehow. You can't just ignore it. So I came up with Fourth Jewel in the Crown, and the belting the Grand Slam played off some of the language the Breeders' Cup folks had used in their press releases throughout the last couple of weeks leading up to the Classic, and that was a nod to them because I knew that had been part of their own marketing approach to that race. The phrase "everlasting credit to the sport," again, thinking of how one could describe this horse in words that had not been used already, there's an old saying that if you're a good writer or broadcaster, you borrow your material. If you're a great one, you steal it. So I ended up I just flat robbed that phrase from the Keeneland Charter. And what had happened was a couple of nights before the race, the late Bill Mooney, who was a good friend of yours and mine, he was being honored by the Turf Riders and Broadcasters Association. Bill had been diagnosed with terminal cancer. And when he spoke that evening at the event, in typical Bill Mooney fashion, he shifted the spotlight off of himself and spoke eloquently of how Lexington, Kentucky had become his home, despite the fact he grew up in New England, and how Keeneland had become his home racetrack. And he read from the Keeneland Charter that night. He shared with everyone in the room that when the founders had established Keeneland, they had written it into the charter that they wanted Keeneland to be an everlasting credit to the sport. And the way that hit my ear was, okay, so these same founders never wanted a track announcer. I mean, let's just be honest about it. The track went 60 years with no track announcer, and it was really a reminder to me, get your ego in check there, bud. If it had been up to the founders, you wouldn't even be calling this race on Saturday. So I thought, what's the next best thing I can do? Well, maybe the next best thing I can do is give this horse a send-off in words, at least use words that maybe the founders of Keeneland might have used if they had been describing this horse, or if they had been the one saying farewell or we wish you well. So that was why I chose "everlasting credit to the sport." It was actually a nod to Bill Mooney. It was a nod to the Keeneland founders, and I thought it was also appropriate for the occasion.
Larry, it was an 8-horse field. American Pharoah stepped into stall number 4. Take me back to the seconds right before the gates opened. What do you remember about that moment in time?
Well, not a whole lot. It's been 5 years, but I just remembered, in any big race where there's a horse like that, your binoculars are glued to him, in the starting gate. And I just remember watching him come out of there, and in the Belmont Stakes, he kind of reared back when they left the gate. So I wanted to watch out for that, make sure he didn't do that. He didn't. He just came out better than any horse in the race, bounded right out to the front. And from there, it was just fun to watch and fun to call.
There was one point in the race, and he had the lead from start to finish, but there was one point as they were going into the far turn that it appeared as if Tonalist FNX, and Frosted were starting to bear down on the Triple Crown winner, but American Pharoah quickly opened back up again. Your voice noticeably became slightly more excited as that was happening. Do you remember what was going through your mind as those other horses were starting to close the gap?
Yeah, I remember watching Victor and seeing what he was doing on American Pharoah, and you could see that the other horses were catching up, but he was riding with total confidence. And then when he just asked him to go as they approached the quarter pole, it was sayonara. I mean, that race was over. He said, "See you guys later." It was. I think I said in the call, Victor Espinosa starts to pump on him and says, "Let's go." And it was showtime, and the horse responded, and that was it.
Yeah, he then comes into the stretch in front of more than 50,000 fans. There are flash bulbs popping everywhere, and he's beginning to pull away and open up, and it's becoming more of a foregone conclusion. Not only did your cadence go to another level, as it rightfully should at that point, but you almost sounded at points, Larry, as if he was taking your breath away. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, I remember he opened up. It was four lengths, and then all of a sudden it was five, it was six. And I'm like, oh, my God, I mean, these are really good horses behind him, and he's making, you know, an easy race of this. And, I expected it that, you know, he was able to win the Breeders' Cup Classic against older horses, but I didn't think he'd demolish them like he did. And I was, I think I was kind of in awe, you know, as they came down the stretch at what I was seeing. And it almost, like, made me, not think of what I wanted to say, just because it was like, oh, my goodness, look at this performance.
Kurt, what do you remember about the moments just before the 2015 Classic?
The thing I remember was, as soon as the prior race, the Breeders' Cup Turf, had concluded, it really hit me just for an instant. I remember asking myself, do I even belong here? Because I'm a guy who started out his career calling county fair thoroughbred races. I would guess that the first race I ever called was probably a race for an $800 purse or a $1,000 purse. Now you find yourself about to call a $5 million race with a horse who's seeking to accomplish something which no horse has ever done. And so at 40 minutes to post, just for a brief instant, there was that thought in the back of my mind where you want to turn and run out the door and say no, I am not worthy of this. And I had to go back to a friend of mine, Dave Moody. I've worked with Dave for many years at Motor Racing Network. And Dave told me one time when I had said something like that to him, Dave shook his head. He said, look, he said, to be the track announcer at Keeneland on any day of the week is a big deal. And he said, I get it. He said, we all get nervous. We all get uptight. But he said, at some point, bud, you ought to be knocking people out of the way and saying, give me that headset. Give me that microphone. This is my moment. I am the guy that should be calling this race. So I had to think back to Dave's advice, and I realized, okay, he's right. This is no time to go weak at the knees. Just the opposite. You need to just consider yourself fortunate you've landed in this spot. And then when the horses were going into the gate, I remember it being fairly unremarkable. The gate load seemed pretty calm. When they sprung the gate latch, Pharoah came right out. There was never any doubt. It wasn't like he stumbled or he was late getting out of the gate. So that really helped me settle into the call pretty quickly.
So American Pharoah comes into the stretch, and we talked about the way that you approached the send-off for American Pharoah, but he comes into the stretch and he's pulling away. Put me there with you at that very moment as he begins to come into the stretch and pull away.
Looking through my binoculars to the top of the stretch and seeing that horse opening up with every stride as he turned for home, and seeing race fans lined up along the outside fence around the far turn, you know, probably five, six, seven deep, in the back of my mind, I was thinking about all of the old magazine photos I have seen from racetracks, which back in racing's classic era would show the old Model A's and Model T's and the parking lot off the turn here would be all of these folks that would be just lined up in these enormous assemblies, stand trying to crane their neck and see over the fence and get a glimpse of the superstar of the day. And I remember thinking as he went by the quarter pole, in the back of my mind, this is amazing. I've always loved calling at Keeneland. It's arguably the most beautiful setting anywhere in America, or maybe even the world, to have horse racing. And yet, I had never experienced something like that. And as someone who loves history, it almost felt like that this horse and that crowd had taken us all back in time, 50 or 75 or 100 years. It was a marvelous thing just to stand there. And I remember thinking, looking through those binoculars, you're never going to see this again. You are never, for the rest of your career, you are never going to look through these binoculars. You're going to see some great things. You're going to see some things that are amazing, fantastic, fun to describe. But that moment, with that particular environment, that particular horse, as he entered the stretch, I do remember in the back of my mind thinking, you will never, ever see this again the rest of your life. Enjoy it and be grateful for it.
Well, you may have just answered my final question, but what's the one thing that Kurt Becker will always remember when he thinks back on that 2015 Breeders' Cup Classic?
It will definitely be the fact that Keeneland allowed me to do the track call, and frankly that you and the gang at Horse Racing Radio Network allowed me to do the network radio call, because there was a time when the Breeders' Cup and NBC, they would simply have their announcer do the house call and network radio call as well as the television call. And Keeneland really went out of their way to help make that happen. And I know you did as well, and I am grateful for that. I've always said that if Keeneland shows me the door tomorrow and says, Kurt, you're done here, I cannot be bitter. I will have to always be grateful for that opportunity, because none of the parties involved had to do that. And it was fun because Larry Colmus called the race for NBC from a booth right outside of my door. And he and I got to share in the experience, in the sense that once the race was over, he came into the booth and we talked about the horse, we talked about the race, we talked about the year. And as a friend and a colleague in the industry, to have that moment with Larry was a lot of fun. And he was very gracious with his demeanor, as always, and did a terrific job with the call for NBC.
Larry, what's the one thing you'll always remember about that 2015 Breeders' Cup Classic?
To be honest with you, it was right after that race. And I said he goes out in style, and you could almost hear me start to break up when I said that. And when, when Tom Hammond took over after my call was done, I was just absolutely in tears. I remember I'm in that calling location at Keeneland outside, and I mean, I just started bawling. I did the same thing after the Belmont, but this was even more so. I was just like, can you believe you've gone through this year, how great 2015 was, and, you know, with this, because of this racehorse, and how much fun you had calling him, and it's finally over. And he went out the way he did, and it just emotionally drained me and blew me away. And I remember going back after the race to the NBC compound, and I said to our producer, Rob Hyland, I said, I hope you didn't catch me on camera after that race. He goes, no, we did. He goes, you really lost it. I said, yeah, I really did. And it was for good reason. It was just so special. And the other thing I do remember right after that, too, was going over into Kurt Becker's booth, and we gave each other a hug, and you know, because we both got to get through this thing together, and it made it that special, because he's such a good friend. So what a memorable Breeders' Cup it was.
Well, fantastic stuff from Larry Colmus and from Kurt Becker. My thanks to both of those gentlemen for taking the time to look back on that 2015 Breeders' Cup Classic and American Pharoah. I loved when they talked about their different approach to preparing to call that race. Kurt was very cognizant of the history of Keeneland. Of course, he's the only announcer, full-time announcer, that Keeneland has ever known. He was very cognizant of that history and of what Breeders' Cup was trying to promote with Grand Slam. Larry, on the other hand, said, well, I was never crazy about the term Grand Slam. I thought it was kind of made up, so I took the approach that I was going to leave that out of it and focus more on the horse, his final furlong. Great stuff. I mean, that was just one element of that interview that stood out to me. The other one was cool at the end when they talked about sharing that moment together after the race. They both went through that together, Kurt on the radio side, Larry on the TV side. And that was incredible to me. They both said that was one of the things they're always going to remember, is that moment when Larry came into Kurt's booth and they looked at each other and hugged and said, hey, we just went through this together. Cool stuff. Two good friends, two outstanding announcers. And again, my thanks to them for taking the time to do that. By the way, American Pharoah, that was his final career start, as we know. Belted the Grand Slam, if you want to go with that term. He was born at 11 p.m. on Groundhog Day, February 2nd, 2012, at Stock Place Farm in Lexington. That was just 28 miles from where he wrapped up his career. Of course, he now stands out at Coolmore's Ashford Stud in Versailles. One of two Triple Crown winners that they stand at Ashford, by the way, Justify the other one. But so cool. And again, one more time, my thanks to them. Really do appreciate it. Not going to see American Pharoah type hype when it comes to this year's Breeders' Cup. But that Breeders' Cup Classic is just sensational. And no surprise, Bob Baffert back in the spotlight. He has three horses entered in there. Improbable, Maximum Security, and the Derby winner, Authentic. Bob has won the Classic a record three times. He'll see if he can make it four. Belt his own Grand Slam later this afternoon. All right, I'm going to get to another break. When I come back, I'll tell you what you can look forward to this afternoon on the network, and I'll have a word from Bloodhorse. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the 2020 Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup.
McKinsey, new for 2021 at Gainesway. The son of Kentucky Derby winner Street Sense, McKinsey was named a TDN Rising Star following his five-length debut victory at Santa Anita and was an undefeated Grade 1 winning two-year-old, the fastest juvenile of 2017. McKinsey scored four Grade 1 victories in his career with Grade 1 wins at 2, 3, and 4.
Furlong to go, McKinsey is in front. Axelrod set down by Joe Bravo. Mike Smith working on McKinsey. McKinsey holding on. Axelrod is full out. McKinsey is clear as they come down to the finish. Baffert, Smith, McKinsey, they've done it. McKinsey has it by two.
Coming to the final furlong, McKinsey's in front. Yoshida runs after him on the outside. Vino Rosso is third. McKinsey comes by the 16th pole, and he's going to do it. McKinsey has won the Whitney.
11 triple-digit buyer speed figures. Earnings over $3.4 million. McKinsey standing at Gainesway.
46 Solutions makes technology easy. We manage the day-to-day technology needs of Kentucky businesses by offering 24/7 help desk support, infrastructure design, and cybersecurity protection to keep your focus on your business. Our residential engineers can design and install media rooms, home theaters, and make sure your home Wi-Fi network runs smoothly with the best speeds available. Visit 46solutions.com today. 46 Solutions is your technology partner.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites.
This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
This is HRRN, your exclusive home for the Breeders' Cup World Championships.
Many have compared the popular gelding Wise Dan to the great John Henry, especially after he was voted 2012 Champion Male Turf Horse, Champion Older Male, and the Horse of the Year. In 2013, as a six-year-old, Wise Dan returned to defend his title in the Breeders' Cup Mile at Santa Anita. Sent off as the 4-5 favorite, Wise Dan would be ridden by Jose Lascano, replacing Hall of Famer John Velasquez, who was injured earlier in the day.
Wise Dan's in the center of the course. Silencio is coming on too, but here's Wise Dan alongside of Za Approval. Silencio coming up the fence. Wise Dan's got him. Wise Dan, brilliant in the mile.
With that game victory, Wise Dan joined Miesque, Lure, DeHaas, and Goldakova as repeat winners of the Breeders' Cup Mile, and once again took home Horse of the Year, Champion Turf Horse, and Older Male Eclipse Awards at the end of 2013. A fan favorite, Wise Dan's second consecutive mile score was yet another memorable moment in Breeders' Cup history.
Hi, this is jockey Rajiv Maharaj, and I love listening to my friends on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, you won't want to miss the November 7th issue of Blood Horse Magazine and Tablet. Features include The Right Path, Scott Hyder, and Family's Thoughtful Journey in Breeding and Racing. What's going on here? World Championships features innovations amid COVID Cup. Yeah, the COVID Cup. That's kind of like what it is this year. Calder worked for South Florida. Sun sets on a Sunshine State track. And Trio of Breeding Myths, a study finds diversity in thoroughbred breed. You can download a copy of Magazine and Tablet today on the App Store or Google Play, or go to shop.bloodhorse.com, and don't miss their fall special going on now. 10 weekly issues for only $10. Go to bloodhorse.com/fall20 to take advantage of that offer. Well, I've been asking you throughout the show to let me know which horse or horses you are most looking forward to wagering on in today's Breeders' Cup races, and so many people weighing in. I appreciate that. Serengeti Empress, Tis the Law, getting some votes. Serengeti Empress getting a couple of votes, actually. Swiss Skydiver in the Distaff. Cayenne Pepper getting a vote. One of the Europeans in the Filly Amare Turf. Looking forward to that is Jeff, who was kind enough to tweet to us. So keep them coming. Angie in Lexington says that she is looking forward to Tis the Law and Maximum Security in the Breeders' Cup Classic. Well, good luck there, Angie. Hope you pick up a few dollars on those horses later today. I gave you a couple of historic elements to today in racing earlier in the show when Marty McGee joined me. November 7th, 1988, Awesome Again defeated Skipaway in the Breeders' Classic. I said 1998, actually. November 7th, 1998, Richard Migliori gained his 3,000th career victory. But that was at Aqueduct. It wasn't in the Breeders' Cup. He finished with more than 4,400 career wins. How about this one for you? You think November 7th is late for the Breeders' Cup. November 8th, 1997. So tomorrow in 1997, Favorite Trick, remember him? Won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, concluding an 8-for-8 two-year-old campaign. He would later go on to be voted the 1997 Horse of the Year. It is one of the true highlights of the Breeders' Cup. There have been so many. Our coverage this afternoon begins noon Eastern. Make sure you join us for that coverage. Noon to 5:30, myself, Bobby Newman, Ashley Mayhew, bringing you exclusive radio coverage of every single Breeders' Cup race here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Sirius 219, XM 201, streaming worldwide, horseracingradio.net, and our affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country. So many ways to tune in and join us later today, and should be a really fun show. Been fun having you aboard this morning. Thanks to everybody who took time to weigh in on the poll question. For my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studio. For Chauncey, handling all of our social media, I'm Mike Penna. As always, it's worked 7 weeks in a row so far. How about this? Bring on the Cowboys. Go Steelers. 7-0. Let's go 8-0.